Three people, let them know how glad you are to see them here at Word of Life Church this morning. We are so thrilled to have all of you here with us. And before we dive into the Word, I want to make everyone mindful that we do have a Saturday night service that starts at 5:30. And our goal for the Saturday night service is to not only attract new people to the church who may not be able to come to church on Sundays because they're going to work, but also to open up space in our Sunday morning services. So if you're in this service, which you are, and you come to this service regularly on Sunday mornings, we want to encourage you to at least try out our Saturday night service. There's a longer praise and worship set, fun stuff like that. I dress a little bit more casual. I preach sitting down for a good part of last night, so you could come and check that out. Someone says, I don't know about a preacher sitting down while he preaches. Well, Jesus sat down a good bit. We saw that even last week, that he sat down and taught the people. But with that, we're going to have a lot of fun, but we want to encourage you to try it out. Maybe you'll find yourself liking that service even more, but we really need, especially in this service, people to make a decision to try that out or try out a different service to open up space for new people. This service attracts the majority of our new visitors. And so if you could help us out with that, that would be amazing. Let's open up our Bibles this morning to the book of 3 John chapter 1. And we're going to look at verse 2. On the screens, if you can go to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7. On the screens, 3 John chapter 1. And we're going to look here at verse 2 in a minute in your Bibles. If you're not familiar with 3 John, it is in the New Testament. In your New Testament, that's the back of the book. In the New Testament, there are many Johns. You've got the first big John, and then you've got three little Johns. We are going to the third little John this morning. I saw a tweet the other day on my Twitter feed. I thought it was pretty good. And it said, in order to have success in life, you need three bones. Three bones. They said you need a wishbone, you need a backbone, and you need a funny bone. I really like that. Oh, that was cute. I think I favored it. A wishbone, a backbone, and a funny bone. If you want to be a success in life, you need three bones, a wishbone, a backbone, and a funny bone. Well, anyway, after I saw it, I didn't think too much of it until a couple of days ago, and that stood with me, just came up in my heart as I was praying. That if you want to be a success, you need a wishbone, backbone, and funny bone. And the more I thought about it, and the more I meditated on it, the more I see how true it is. And so for the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk about a wishbone, a backbone, and a funny bone, and make sure you are a possessor of all three. Now, before we dive into that, let's talk about success. When you mention that word success, especially in a church setting, a lot of people can come up with a lot of different ideas. Some may think of a new house or a new car or new position at work or climbing the corporate ladder. One of my favorite definitions for success, and it really is what I try to live my life by, is that the people who know me the best respect me the most. I like that. That, you know, you hear this saying a lot, and if you're a pastor, you don't want to get too close to the sheep because they'll start losing respect for you. I didn't see Jesus having that problem. You know, you don't want to have character flaws that people don't see from afar, and then they get up close and say, you know what, I don't know if I want to listen to them anymore. I want my family to respect me more than anyone. I want those who know me the best to respect me the most. I think that's a good measuring point for success. I asked my father-in-law a couple of years ago, I said, to you, what does a successful life look like? At the end of your life, if I was to say, your life is a success, what would you say your life looked like? And he didn't say I'd be living in this kind of house, and he didn't say I'd be driving this kind of car. He said, my life, at the end of it, if it's a success, he used this terminology. He said, I'll have my family sitting around my table. His little girl is my wife, and he's got other daughters as well as a son. And he said, if I'm a success at the end of my life, my family sits around my table. And what he meant is he has a close-knit family. That's a good definition for success. When you think of success, if all you think about is a new car, we may want to grow up a little bit, just a smidge. Now, you got to start someplace, but there is room for growth there. Now, success is not just material things. Success has much to do with character. And so with this, in order to achieve success, I think that success is a mixture of two primary things. It's a mixture of achievement with enjoyment. What I mean by achievement is I believe every person in this room, you and me, we're not just born into this world, but we were created by God. Now, for all of us, and we all had different creations that you see today, someone created the screens, someone created these drums, someone created this suit, someone created your tie or your dress that you have, someone created it. When they created it, they always built in a purpose with it. There's no point of creation if creation doesn't serve any purpose. And when you look at God's creation, whether it's the grass or the trees, they don't just look good, they have a particular purpose for it. When God created you, he not only created you, you were not only born on this earth, but there is a particular purpose he built you with. There's something you're called to do. Does anyone remember Jesus' last words on the cross? You remember what he said? It is what? Finished. What was he saying? He was saying, the thing that God sent me here to do, my purpose, I finished it. Paul said, I have run my race. I have finished my course. He knew that God had a purpose for his life that he was to achieve. You will never be a success in this life unless you achieve God's purpose. But success is not only achievement, it is also a combination of achievement with enjoyment, because there's no point in achieving things if you go home and find yourself miserable. There's no point in achieving things if you don't enjoy what you're doing or enjoy the people you're doing it with, or if your family thinks you're really mean, then that's going to definitely dim the lights of success a little bit. Now, success is not only achievement, but it is also enjoyment. And what I long for each and every one of you is, one, I long for you to fulfill what God has called you to. But also, two, I long for you to just enjoy your life, enjoy your family, and enjoy your relationship with God. I think in order for you to do that, you need a wishbone and you need a backbone and you need a funny bone. Today, we're going to talk about the wishbone. When I say wishbone, what I want you to think about is vision. Well, somebody said, what do you mean by vision? Well, we all know what we have sight, and with sight you have, you can have 20/20 vision or worse vision, things like that. But that's not the vision I'm talking about. Sight is a function of your eyes. And it sees life as it is. Vision is a function of your heart. And it sees life at its weakest as what it could be. When vision's at its strongest, it sees what life should be. Vision at its weakest, it's a function of your heart. It sees life as it could be. You look from where you're at now and you see a different life. You see what could be. That's vision at its weakest. At its strongest, you look up and you see this is what should be. When I go down to Poindexter, I not only see the buildings and the kind of rundown houses and things like that. That's a function of the eyes. But when I go down there, I also see with my heart. I see what could be, I see better landscaping. I see all of that. But it's even stronger than that. I have a sense of purpose. It should be different. It should be revitalized. It should be strengthened. It should be greater than what it is. And I see it that way. There's buildings there that are run down that I don't see run down. Well, what is that? That's walking by faith and not by sight. Now, all of us in this room are called to live by faith, right? You're called the just shall live by faith. If you've been justified, which you have if you're a Christian, then you are to live by faith. So are we living that way? Well, somebody says, well, how would you know if you're really living by faith? Well, faith has elements to it. And the very first element of faith is hope. Hebrews tells us that faith is the substance of things what? Hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. It's the substance of things hoped for. Before there can be faith, there must be hope. There must be a vision. I'll put it to you this way. Faith demands a target. There should be something that you're believing God for. There should be something that you desire to see in your life that you don't see in your life. That is vision. Vision sees life as it could be, as it should be. So let me ask you this. Do you have one? Do you have a vision for life? When you sit down with your wife, do you know where you're going in life? Where are we going? Where are we going to? A couple of months ago, I was cleaning out a closet at my house. And this particular closet was in my garage, and we use it kind of as a storage closet. And so once you get some of the clutter moved out of the way, I found these boxes that were there. And these boxes were when we first moved in the house that we never unpacked. Only in America could you have so much stuff that you have a box from 6 years ago of stuff you thought that you needed and you never even bothered to unpack it. So with that, I opened up the box, and when I did, I saw some old stuff that I had from 10, 12 years ago. And on the top of the box, there was some old poster boards. And I wrote these when I was like 20, 21, 22. And on it, I had markers. At age 30, I'm going to see this in my life. At age 40, I'm going to see this. At age 50, I'm going to see this. At age 60, I'm going to see this. I'm picking up the board, I'm looking at it. And while I'm looking at it, I just get convicted in my heart. And this is what I got convicted of. Many of the things that I wrote by age 30, I'll achieve, da 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 da, I've seen happen. I've seen happen. And I've seen materialize right before my eyes. Certain markers I've seen reached, and it's been a beautiful thing. But I realize that now I'm coming up to those ages, and I realize I don't dream near as big as I used to. That for whatever reason, the version I am today, and this was a couple of weeks ago, since then I've made adjustments, but the version I am today is not dreaming near as big as the old version of me did. I got to thinking about why. I'm far more successful on a professional level today than I was back then. And when I wrote those boards back then, I was in the middle of crisis. Anything but what people would deem a success or running a successful church. And I, if anything, you would think I'd have far more vision today than I did back then. But it just wasn't the case. And I asked myself, why am I not dreaming as big as I used to dream? And then we had guest speakers in a couple of weeks ago, Aaron and Aaron Hankins, and his father was a preacher, like my father was a preacher. His father still travels today. But now Aaron Hankins pastors the church that his father once pastored, just like I pastor this church that my father once pastored. And so we were talking about some of our favorite messages that our fathers would preach. And he said one of his favorite messages that his father preached was a message entitled Pioneers, Settlers, and Museum Keepers. And he said his father would preach it whenever he traveled out of the church to preach at different churches. That would always be the message that he preached. And the gist of the message is this: there are pioneers in life. And these are people who are searching out new and great territories. And yes, they've come across some good places, but they haven't settled down. They're still pressing in for more. They're still searching for God's best. And they refuse to settle for the good when they know greater is out there. Pioneers. Then he said there are settlers, and settlers were once pioneers. They were people who weren't going to be satisfied with where they were, so they made a decision to press forward and to reach out for something more. And sure enough, they came across something that was pretty good, and they decided to set up shop there, to settle there. And they still venture out some, but they're not near as inquisitive as they once were when they were a pioneer. And then there are museum keepers that turn the place where they have settled into nothing but memories of the past. And their greatest joys don't come from the hope of tomorrow, but rather the memories of the past. And when your past memories are greater than your present dreams, your life, it's in trouble. Because where there is no vision, people start perishing. So when he said that, I said, that's really good. I like that. Pioneers, settlers, museum keepers. And I thought, you know what? And in some cases, recently, I've just kind of thought, you know, this is pretty good. Pretty good. I mean, I'm pretty happy with the church, and the church is growing, and people are coming. Wonderful. It's great. You're glad to see people's lives starting to get better and improve and those types of things. That's great. It's awesome. Wonderful. But with that, I've noticed that I've kind of lost sight of vision. Vision is not goal setting. Goal setting is an event. Vision is a process. Goal setting is what you do at the beginning of New Year's, where you set down by the end of the year, I want these five things to be in my life. By the end of 3 years, I want this to be in my life. By the end of college, by the time I turn 30, I want these things in my life. That's goal setting. Vision is a process. Goal setting is an event. Vision sees the goals on a daily basis. And I mean, I used to have my boards up in my house, and I used to write daily in my journal my top 10 life goals daily, because I saw a report that people who wrote down their goals daily were 97% more likely to see their goals coming to pass. Because what is that? That's not just an event anymore. That's turning goal setting into vision, because when you write those goals, you're seeing them. And man, I saw and have seen so much fruit in my life, and I couldn't help but wonder, why in the world am I not doing that as much? Visioning. I remember a story from years ago, and it was about a professor, and the class was real tough, and all the students just thought, man, this class is real tough. And it came to the end of the year for them to take their year-end exams. And so the teacher walked and put the test face down on all the students' desk. And everyone was kind of tense, because no one really likes taking a test unless you've studied really well. And I was not that guy. I was the guy who was up at 2 the night before trying to cram as much info. So anyway, all the tests are face down on the desk. He tells them, okay, we're going to make a deal. Here's the deal that we're going to make with you. He says, if you want a C, you can get up right now and just walk out. If you want a C, you can get up right now and just walk out. And so all the students kind of looked around like, surely he's joking. Surely he's joking. And I said, no. If you want to see right now, I'm serious. You can just say, I want to see right now, and get up and walk out. So with that, he gave that. And sure enough, one person got up. And then after that, one got up and kind of broke the ice. And over 90% of the class got up and walked out. Just took the C. The rest of the students were kind of sitting there, you know, they were the nerds of the class and that kind of deal. And so they knew they could do better than that. See? And so with that, he said, okay, for those of you who are still left in the room once the door's shut, He said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to understand that life meets your standards. And that a big part of success is not just your education. A big part of success is the standards you set in your own heart. And that the level of life you live will never be above the standard you have in your heart. And he said, now flip the test over. And they flipped it over and it said, one sentence, congratulations, you just received an A. And I can't help but wonder how many people just settle for good, just average, because that's their standard on the inside. And God is saying, wait a minute. There is so much more for you if you will just decide to raise your standards. With the church being where it is today, in a good place, we've got a lot of opportunities to help people. And one of the things I'm enjoying in this season of life is preaching and teaching, but also helping other pastors. Because I know what it's like to be a struggling pastor. I know what it's like to have things not go your way and to wonder what in the world is wrong with you. And so a lot of times we'll do church tours where other churches will come in and tour this facility. And we had a church tour a couple of weeks ago, and their team was walking through the facility. And they were asking, you know, okay, well, it's really easy to grow a church like this. You know, when you've got great Lakeland exposure, you've got a lot of drive-by traffic, you've got the resources to buy billboards across the street, you've got the resources to buy nice microphones and all of these things. He says, but for our church, we don't have as good a location. We don't have the same resources. We struggle to get people to show up. We struggle to get people to invite people to church. He said, what can we do? I mean, we can't do what you do. We don't have the money to build a building like this. We don't have the people to do things like this. What can we do? And I kind of thought what to tell him, because you want to help him. And as I was thinking about it, the Lord just kind of put something on my heart. I thought, that's good. He said, think about your kids. How many of you have kids? Any of you have kids? Oh, a lot of people have kids, so you'll get this example. If you don't have kids, you were a kid once. You were a kid once, so you'll get it too. When you have kids, you know that as they enroll in school, what happens? The goal is to go from one grade to the next. Now, how many kids on average, you know, probably at least over 90%, go to the next grade? They go from first grade to second grade to third grade to fourth grade to fifth grade to sixth grade until they graduate, and then some go to college, and then some go even longer schooling than that. Why is it that they keep making the next grade? Because there's a standard in their heart that says, and in the parents' heart that says, we will not settle for you staying in the first grade. And you may have to repeat it once, you may have to repeat it twice, but you're going to keep going through school until you get this. And you know what happens? Kids get it. And they start learning how to read, and they learn new skills, and they learn what they need to learn until they pass the second grade, because their standard is set to say, I am not content, the parents are not content with staying on that level. But you know what happens after 12th grade? Most people don't go to college. Now, some people do, and that's wonderful. But you know that even after college, the average American adult today, after college, reads less than two books. After college, less than two books. For the rest of their life, less than two books. Well, why is that? Why is that? Because somewhere along the line, people settle. And instead of reaching for the next level, they're content with staying where they are. Let me ask you this. For you, and it's different for everyone in this room. For you, what's the next level look like? And when's the last time you really focused on it? What do you want? What do you really want 10 years from now? And for whatever reason, have you lowered your standard according to the circumstances of life? Or have you set it as a finite, definite goal? Now, why is this important? That's important because the wishbone vision is the foundation for all achievement. There's always two creations to anything. First, there is an inward creation. And secondly, there is an outward creation. You'll see this example in 3 John chapter 1 and verse 2. Let's read it here. 3 John chapter 1 verse 2 says this. He says, "Beloved," I like that, "I wish above all things that thou mayest prosper and be in health." Now notice this. "Even as thou" what? "Soul prospereth." "Beloved, I wish above all things that you prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers." Now, when people think of that word prosper, they think of a lot of different things, I'm sure. You've got extremes on this end, maybe extremes on the other end. But what this word prosper means, and you can take this to the bank and cash it, I'm not going to lie to you. What this word prosper means is progress. Literally, what this word means in the Greek is you make progress on the journey. That you're progressing on the journey. There's a scripture that ties to this one in the book of Proverbs. "The path of the righteous grows brighter and brighter with each passing day." Prospering God's way is not a certain amount of money or material possessions. It's just your life is making progress. You're seeing progress in life. That's God's goal for you and I, is for us to make progress. But notice he says that your progress in life is directly tied to your progress in another area. Well, what other area? The progress in your soul comes before progress in your life. "Beloved, I wish above all things that you prosper and be in health, even as your soul prospers." Your life will never progress beyond your soul progressing. Your soul must make a progression first. There's a scripture, if you can pull that up in Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 7 on the screens. The scripture here sums this up. All of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it. On the screens, Proverbs 23, verse 7. I can't quote it, but there we go. All right, it says, "For as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he." Do you notice that? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. Who do you think you are, and what do you think you're worthy of? What's your standard on the inside? Have you settled? Years ago, as I mentioned, I was struggling as a preacher, struggling as a pastor, definitely not seeing God's best in any arena of life. I made a decision I was going to give up on the church because what my father had built in 20 years, I felt like I was tearing apart in two. Got down on my knees in the middle of my bathroom floor, tears coming down my cheeks, with a list of ministers that I could give the church to who could do a far better job than myself. And I prayed a prayer that said, "God, if you don't help me now, I'm going to have to turn this church over because we can't have more months like the ones we've been having." And over the process of time of the next couple of days, God helped me. Now, God always gives instruction, and when you follow that instruction, it leads to success. God doesn't just give success, he gives instruction. And if you're willing and obedient to obey the instruction, that's when you eat the good of the land. And so with that, God gives instruction. When you ask God for increase, he doesn't give you increase, he gives you instruction. When you follow that instruction, that's when you see the increase. So with that, I started getting instruction. And the first thing he told me is, "You are walking in outside of the commandment of love." It's the only New Testament commandment. Love your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And with that, there was a couple of events that happened in the first phase of my ministry where, I mean, it was just not pretty. It was ministry politics at its worst, and it hurt me, and it was the reason growing up I didn't want to become a pastor or be in ministry, because there's so much junk behind the scenes and politicking that I do not like. And anyway, with that, I'd been wounded by it, been hurt by it, and the Lord dealt with me as you've allowed that wound to fester into unforgiveness. And if you don't make a change there, it's going to limit my ability to help you. And so I had to deal with that. That was the first thing. The second thing is he said, you're trying too much stuff. And he was right, man. I'd gone to every church growth seminar. I'm a reader by nature. I read all these books, trying a whole bunch of stuff, keeping what works. And he says, look, inquire of me. If in all your ways you'll acknowledge me, I will direct your paths. And you don't have to get me to bless my plan. My plan is already blessed. So, okay, I'll do that more. And then the third thing he said, stop thinking survival and start thinking increase. At that time, the church in 1 year had lost over half its attendance under my exceptional preaching ability and leadership style. And with that, you can imagine what that does to tithes and offerings. And you can imagine you're looking at those reports every day. And when you are in a pool and you're drowning and you don't know how to swim, the only thing you're thinking about is survival. Am I right? And it's the same way with the crisis of life. All I could think about is, how am I going to get out of this mess? How am I going to get out of this mess? How am I going to get out of this mess? And the Lord dealt with me. Stop doing that and start thinking increase. This scripture came to mind during that time. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And just on the inside, I felt the Lord ask me a question. This was the question. If all you think about today is today, what is tomorrow destined to look like? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. There's an inward creation before there's an outward creation. So if all I'm thinking about today is today, then tomorrow is destined to look like, anyone know? Today. And this is why people don't see any progress. This is why people wake up and it's like that Groundhog's Day, where every day just kind of, that movie, every day just kind of looks like yesterday. It's the same progress. I'm really excited about today, not only because of what we're talking about, but after the end of third service, I am taking my oldest son, who's 5 years old, to his very first baseball game. And we are driving to Atlanta, and tomorrow we will see the Atlanta Braves take on the Washington Nationals, and we will see Steven Strasburg pitch. And if you're a baseball fan, then you know how excited I am for that. I'm excited for him because it's his first game. And so with that, we'll be back for Wednesday. Don't want to miss First Wednesdays. We're having a great time. But with that, I am super excited about it because I know where we're going. Now, this morning, you know what? My boy, he woke up and he's got his bags packed. He's ready to go. He's waiting at the door. Today is our boys' trip. And we haven't even gone to the game yet. We haven't even seen the aquarium. But he's pumped up about today. Why? He knows where he's going. Now, let me ask you this. By the end of today, I will be in Atlanta. Why? Well, someone says, because you're going to drive there. Yes. But before the trip, what happened? An idea came. A thought came. This was months ago. You know, I noticed he's paying attention more to sports. I'd love to take him to a game. An idea came. Now, how many ideas come that die just like that? Just like that. You get the idea, you get caught up in the busyness of life, and the idea dies. And there's never any action taken on it. But instead of that idea dying, I continue to think about it. Well, what would it take to get there? Let me check prices. And I looked at airlines, and I thought, nah, I don't want to pay that much money to get on a flight from just Jackson to Atlanta. Well, we could drive, and I start looking at hotel rates. And that thought continued and lingered. Now, we hadn't even made the trip, but what's going on? There's an inward creation before there's an outward creation. Now, here's the thing. If the inward creation stops, the outward creation will never come to pass. You have to finish it in here first before it manifests here. The same thing is true with life. What you once dream of, what you once see yourself doing, see yourself going, see your family going. Did you have an idea once? Did you go over to a couple's house once? You know, man, it'd be great one day to be doing what they're doing. That'd be great. And you get around and you're not intimidated by it. You're inspired. And it's like, man, I could do that. I could be that. And it comes as an idea. And maybe even wrote it as a goal, but that's still not vision. That's still not a wishbone. When does it turn into vision? When today you lift up your eyes and you see a greater tomorrow. Now, what do most people do? Most people give up on vision. You know why they give up on vision? Because they think, how in the world could I ever get there? Do you know that's how every miracle stops? Do you know that the New Testament began with the question, how? You remember? God came to Mary, gave her a vision for life. Mary, you are going to give birth to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. Emmanuel shall be his name, which means God is with us. And what she asked? How in the world could I be pregnant with a child and never know a man? And what was God's response? For with God, all things are possible. Mary, you're not limited to your circumstance. You're only limited by your faith. And she accepted it. She said, Lord, be it unto me according to your word. And instead of the idea dying, it turned into vision. That vision started in her before it ever came out of her. If something gets in you big enough in abundance, it will come on you every time, good or bad. That's why fear is so bad, so negative. But with this, you may be in a place right now where you say, you know what? I'm comfortable. I'm kind of happy with where it is. But Pastor, I get what you're saying. I just don't see how I could ever leave this and go here because circumstances and all that just doesn't make sense. Here's what I want to tell you and leave you with this, and we'll close with this. God never asked anyone in this entire book to figure out the how. Never. He only asked them to believe the what. Peter didn't know how he was walking on water. But when he tried to figure out how, he began to sink. When he got his eyes off the what and on the how, that's when it stopped. Moses didn't know how am I going to deliver 1 million people from a dictator and lead them into a promised land. God didn't ask him to figure out the how. All God cared about was, do you know the what? David didn't know, how would I go from being a shepherd boy all the way to being a king? God didn't ask him to figure out the how. He just asked him to never lose track of the what. What have you lost track of? I looked at that board and realized I've left a lot of the what's behind because I couldn't figure out the how's. But then I looked, there were some other what's on there that I didn't give up on. And even though I didn't know the how's always came. They always do when people have a wishbone and don't lose track of the what's. I want to encourage you. If you're single, go home, take out a sheet of paper and write, where am I going? Where am I going? If you're married, on the way home, turn, look over at your wife and say, where are we going? 5 years from now, where do we want to be? 10 years from now, where do we want to be? If you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. But once you set a destination, the hows come. Well, I'll go there by car and we'll take this road and we'll go this way. And the same is true for life. But first, you got to raise your standard. You've got to get a vision for your life. You should have a vision for your life that is so clear that if me and you were having dinner and I asked, what's your vision for life? You could articulate it to me clearly, so clearly you could write it down and make it plain. Can you do that? I want to encourage you, get to a place where you can and take time every day to focus on those goals. Focus goals equals vision. Take the time to do it. Every head bowed, every eye closed. Let me